Copping Talks. Let's see it. 105 hours a week can't be beat. Welcome to Topping Talks. Topping Talks is a Topping Tribune production. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Topping Technologies. Topping Technologies is an IT, value-added reseller, and services company with a special proficiency in IT security. Heck, I see their founder at least twice a day. Gotta say he's quite handsome and brilliant. He's me, see, that's a joke. If you're an IT leader or a business owner, reach out to the team at sales@toppingtechnologies.com. Also, still giving away a free flamethrower with every IT purchase with Picatinny rail adapter, so you can mount it to any standard AR-15, like all awesome accessories can be. Go to toppingtechnologies.com and click the flamethrower button to learn more and see me shooting a flamethrower. Lastly, don't forget to take time to like, subscribe, and comment. Tell your family, tell your friends, heck, tell your enemies, tell anyone, everyone. Now, without further ado, today I'm proud to say I'm interviewing Jeremy Jennings, who is an IT project manager at Oakwood Bank. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So winding back the clock a couple of years, how did you first get into IT?
Well, it all started a long time ago when I was born. No, I'm just kidding.
Galaxy far, far away, some might say.
No, so I did 8 years in the Coast Guard.
I appreciate your service. That's awesome.
Thank you for the support. And I got out and had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. So I was good at cars, so I tried cars first. COVID hit. COVID didn't like me in cars.
What were you doing in the cars? Engineering, mechanic,
mechanics. Yeah, my original goal was to be like my father. He was a master mechanic, and I really wanted to get to that level, maybe even going beyond being a diagnostician. Mm-hmm. And COVID kind of changed all my plans because I realized that that wasn't a good field for longevity. Mm-hmm. I talked to a few friends of mine in IT, and they were like, you'd be good at it. You like puzzles. Da, 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 da. I was like, I hate computers. Absolutely hate them. They always disagree with me. And needless to say, I ended up going to my computer career, which I at the time thought was a joke, I'll be honest.
Really?
But it wasn't. It is a very accelerated, if you take advantage of it, it's very accelerated career path because they basically set you up to get a cert every 5 weeks.
Really?
And I ended up getting out of that after 7 months. I had my initial, I think, 6 or 7 certs. And it was just the first program. I got my first job in IT at an MSP, like everyone I believe should do, because it's the best training ground for you.
Oh, you'll get a lot of experience in a very short amount of
very,
time.
Very, very short. Yes. Oh, yeah. I started off as a field engineer. I loved it, in all honesty. All the travel, getting to meet people. I love talking, obviously.
What kind of engineering was it? Was it a desktop, laptop, or data center, or security?
So for just the field service side, it was mainly break fix, I would say, more than anything. Mm-hmm. I was only on that for about 6 months, though. And I kind of thank my schooling for that, first off, because they had taught me so much. And I, again, took advantage of every single opportunity I could in there to learn everything I could. You know, it took me 6 months in field service before I moved up to project engineer, project level one. That's where I got to touch everything from start to finish, scratch, fixing anything that was broken, whether it be, you know, Cisco switches, something simple like that, all the way up to, you know, helping out build an entire Azure environment for a company.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't just me. It was other project engineers involved.
Of course.
It was, you know, a whole team. But, man, learning from all those guys, plus the PMs that I was underneath, it was a great time. I kind of saw myself going that route all the way to the top at first, and I was even considering like a cloud development type role maybe later on. But as I got to know the project managers more, I just kind of realized I kind of like that job a lot more.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, from there, I just kind of went underneath their guidance and started learning what they did. And I was very fortunate with the first company I was with that once I got into my project engineering role and I was situated in it and I was comfortable running my own projects kind of thing, they were like, yeah, so here's what we would do. Go ahead and handle it yourself. Like, cool. I basically did the whole project myself as the engineer and the manager.
Oh, wow.
And that for me was like the pinnacle of what I love doing.
What was your favorite project? You don't have to say the customer name, obviously, but do you remember a specific subject material or kind of hardware or software deployment?
Honestly,
or one you're most proud of?
I think my favorite project, there was a manufacturing company, which that MSP I was at specifically was focused on financial institutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone knows financial institutions. We have auditing. We have to aware of the government. We have all these laws and regulations and such.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the manufacturing is not exactly the same way, so they're a little bit lackadaisy on it.
Oh, yeah.
They don't like to spend as much as a financial institution was because obviously you need a higher level of security, right?
Oh, yeah.
But there was one company that I worked for where they made a challenge. They said, yeah, this is how much we want to spend. I'm like, yeah, you want me to set up a whole new warehouse for that? Okay, I'll try. Well, I always remember this. I got there, and it's probably another 3 hours away from here. So I had drove all the way out there all morning.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get this to work. And this was just the initial review of the site just to see what I could do. Mm-hmm. Well, we got lucky. The previous company had left all their old, I think they were 2960Xs. And really? I remember those switches, and I'm like, okay, they're not under warranty, but they're still usable.
Yeah, they still turn on.
They still got life in them. Like, you know, they still turn on. They got life in them. Even if the ones that don't, I think they ended up having a total of like 24 switches total.
Oh, wow.
That really? They had just left there in their networking racks all over the place.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I told the customer, I was like, okay, so you're going to have to sign a couple of waivers.
Yeah.
But I think we can make these work, but you will have to spend some money on some good. We're going to put a good front level 3 switch in front of all that.
Yeah.
And then a good ASA in front of all that as well, just to be sure. Or be safe, sorry. And the challenge of doing all that, I liked a lot. Now, granted, these racks were 30 feet in the air, too. So that was also
30 feet in the air. Where are they hiding? In the attic?
Well, so it's a big manufacturing plant. They recycle a lot of old material into new material. But
so nice, clean environments, not at all stressful or bad for the equipment or the people.
Right. Yeah. I actually liked the environment before they moved in. but no, like that was one of the more challenging ones. There's a couple others I can think of, but that one I think I had the most fun with just because I've never had to like reuse old equipment, I guess. Yeah. That was the first time I'd ever experienced that. Plus working with the customer, I mean, they ended up giving me a phenomenal review just because of, I ended up coming under what their budget originally was because I was doing my best to make sure. And again, remember at this time I was running my own projects as the PM and as the PE. Mm-hmm. Now I had the PM's backup. I was underneath the senior PM at the time, I believe. And anytime I needed assistance, he would jump in. He's like, oh, you're on the right track. You know, just keep moving forward with that. Here's the only piece of advice. And like, that was it. He was just limited, but you know, and those experiences alone has kind of guided me to where I'm at now. Now I've only been an official PM, I guess you could say, with a title for the last year. But I was very fortunate with the company I'm at now. So I went from that MSP to another one, didn't stay there too long because I didn't like, it wasn't for me. It wasn't a cultural fit.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I have nothing against the company or anything like that. But then where I work now, my CTO reached out to me and found out I was available. And the reason I say that is because that Oakwood Bank is contracted with the MSP that I worked at. And from day one, I always remember that. He's always been like, oh, when you can come work for me? When you can come work for me? I was like, I can't. I work for you technically now already. So, you know, just request me. But he ended up pulling me in. I was originally the network engineer for him. Came in, found some slowness and pitfalls that we quickly patched up and got settled out. And then he's like, man, you are really good at projects. So you're just going to be my project manager and you're just going to manage all of it from now on. Like, yeah, no problem. I'll take care of that. He's like, you're still going to have to kind of be a network. I was like, that's fine. Yeah. Give me the project manager. I love doing that stuff. Like, so he basically passed any projects that came to him straight to me. And this is the CTO.
Awesome.
I love working directly underneath the CTO. It's so much fun.
It was a lot less bureaucratic BS if you had that direct line too.
Move
a lot quicker.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. And just learning from him alone, like that's another thing too, is I've learned from everybody. I don't care if it's somebody low, somebody high. Everyone has something to teach you. And as long as you're humble and you can recognize that, you will always learn something, even if it's patience.
What's the biggest thing that he's taught you recently or most invaluable thing?
If I had to say one single thing, it would be the business acumen that I've gained from him.
Mm.
Like that alone, like thinking like a C-level. I mean, I'm pretty young. I'll admit that, right? I'm no 40-year-old ready for C-level at all, I would say. But I would say that he has accelerated my learning in that. So, you know, I don't have my degree yet, but I plan on going to finish it in project management. It's applied project design and analysis. But should I ever get the opportunity to prove myself in front of somebody, I will be able to hold myself in front of that person and say, like, yes, I can help you run this business.
Mm.
And it was because of the current CTO and a lot of the managers I've had that I've come up with, and the PMs for that matter.
Mm.
Like, again, I've learned from all of them, and I will never dismiss anything that I'm taught. Even if it's bad information, it's still information.
Very true. I was going to say, even in a bad company, you kind of learn of what you don't want to do.
Correct.
It's like, yeah, I think we've all been, throughout everyone's career, they've had some places they didn't appreciate or, you know.
Yeah.
There's a couple of leaders I report to back in the day. I was like, this is teaching me very much of what I don't want to be when I grow up.
Yeah, I mean, I've God, I remember I've had to involve HR in some companies just because they created hostile work environments, and I have no shame about it. And and it's like, you went to HR. I can't believe you did that. Like, well, I'm looking out for me because you're not looking out for me.
Yeah.
And of course they don't know how to react to that. And it's like, only you're going to look out for you. That's it. No one else can. And you just have to be brave enough to do it.
Yeah. Got to cover your ass.
Yep. CIA.
Yeah, exactly. Corporate America. Sometimes.
That's why I make sure everything's in an email.
Yeah. The only useful thing I learned from college, or one of the maybe three useful things I learned in college, was what professor told me, the E in email stands for evidence, which, yeah, it's pretty darn true.
Absolutely.
Good rule of thumb.
Absolutely. If it ain't documented, it ain't real.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if it's not an Outlook, the event does not exist.
That's right.
Yeah. From oil changes to customer events, I always tell folks, if it's not a calendar invite, I can and will forget.
Right.
And what made you choose the financial industry? Just because the CTO reached out, or were you always fascinated? Because it's one of the most complex and almost regulated industries of all of business, especially for IT, and how you got to be so vigilant with the bad guys and threat actors constantly going after banks.
Yeah, it is very constant. I've definitely got more involved on the security side of things. I did finish out my associate's degree with my computer career, and a lot of that was focused on security, and I kind of realized, like, I don't really necessarily like this.
Yeah.
Not for me kind of thing. But I'm glad I went and learned all that, because I am more involved with that. But I guess what made me choose going there is I had already built a repertoire with this specific CTO, and I just knew that that's where I needed to go. Like, something in my gut said, you have to do this.
Yeah.
And it's been challenging, I'll admit. Because you have a lot to learn. Like, I went from, I had to do all the setups with the MSP I worked at. And, you know, you got to meet all the requirements and blah, 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 blah. But, like, you know, it was like, okay, move on to the next one, move on to the next one, move on to the next one. You just kind of keep grinding them out.
Yeah.
But now I actually have to learn it all and focus on it all and make sure that everything I'm doing follows suit with the laws and regulations, because I don't want to go to prison.
Right?
I think just knowing that going in here is going to be what helps me grow faster. And it's going to be challenging, it's going to be hard, but anything that's worth it in life is supposed to be that way.
Very true.
So that's kind of the only reason I went, is like, I knew it would be hard for me to do it. And that's the same reason why right now, a good example is let's just say 15 years of experience total of professional type experience. But I've only got 1 year of project management, which doesn't really get you a job when you're looking at other project management jobs. They're requiring 3 years minimum or a degree. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't have my degree yet. I was fortunate enough, I got a recruiter to straight up tell me, like, oh yeah, you're not going to get this job because you don't have the degree. You don't check the checkbox. Like, okay, cool. But going from financials to anything else, I'm going to have to get that degree. So the next hard step for me is going for that degree. That I say hard because I don't know what I'm getting myself into yet.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess that's what I do. I choose the hard path, and my life seems to be easier because I choose the hard path.
Makes you stronger.
Yeah, exactly.
I do debate, though, how much a college degree is really worth in many instances, but like for project management, yeah, some companies want to see that little piece of paper. It's like, oh yeah, you went to school, you got these trainings. To me, it's all about, you know, life experience. Like, if you've been a project manager for X amount of years, who gives a damn about a piece of paper? But again, that's just me.
Yeah, yeah, and I get that. But you know what? That's fine. You gave me an excuse. That's your excuse. But I'm going to turn it to a reason. I'm going to have my degree. And the next time you tell me I can't get the job, let's discuss why.
Exactly. Do you have your heart set on a specific particular institution, or?
I'm actually fully enrolled now for UNT.
Oh, nice. There you go.
I'll be taking the Applied Project Design and Analysis BS degree. So I'm excited.
It sounds long and complex.
I do like it because it's a more hands-on degree. You're actually, like, from what I've understood, you're working with the companies to actually develop a certain project with that company while you're in school.
That's
and then there's
cool.
like two required internships. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, good. Everything's built in. Like, this is going to force me to learn even more than what I like. Just fill the gaps kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a reader now. So, you know, I'm reading the project management book, the PIM box, this. Like, I'm doing everything I need to do to learn the basics. Mm-hmm. But you got to have the experience.
Oh, yeah.
That's all there is to it. And that's okay. I'm going to get it.
That's invaluable because, again, well, it used to be, well, still a lot of colleges are just, yeah, here's a piece of paper, here's some classes, and it's all theoretical. It's not actually real world. It's like, yeah, that's, to me, mostly useless. Like, real world application of skill sets and kind of lessons learned is really where the tires hit the pavement, so to say.
Yeah.
So it always blows my mind where some degrees are all just, you know, taking tests, filling out forms, and writing reports. It's like, yeah. To me, internships are a lot more valuable than, like, actual deployment of projects. That's really quantifiable experiences. That makes It's a lot more value add, right. I think, to the degree.
Agreed. Yeah, I do agree with that. And it's funny. I still remember. It's so weird being at my age and then going to a college. Like, with, oh, my God. I can't even think what I'm talking about right now.
How old are you, man? Come on.
I'll be 35 this year.
Oh, you're so young, Buck.
I'm still young. Yeah. But, like, when you're going to college at my age and you go in there for, like, all the required stuff you got to do before you go in, you're sitting around a bunch of 18, 20-year-olds.
I mean, you might stand out because you don't have short blue or pink hair. So you might have to get a cow ring or I don't know. The passion is something else different these days.
Yeah, you know, I still got my old band shirt. So maybe if I wear those and some tattered jeans, I'll blend in real well.
Well, you might have to get a different car, maybe just a little bit as well.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, do love my cars. But, no, just... being around them and, you know, hearing, like, I still remember we're in this room and it's maybe like 25 of us and they tell us, oh, everybody introduce yourselves and say your degrees. And I'm just listening, general business. I'm like, are y'all all just here to party?
Because yes.
All of my friends that took general business just partied their way through and they graduated.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just talking about a simple BA degree here, nothing crazy. And then they get to me and I'm like, yeah, applied project design. And everybody just kind of looks at me funny and I'm like, I'm the weirdo here, ain't I?
This is the guy here with the purpose. What's up with him? What's he doing here?
Yeah, the only thing that saved me is I remember the one guy next to me. He's going to the same field that I am, roughly, but he's doing the industrial side of things. And I'm like, oh, thank God, somebody else that's weird like me.
Someone has a legitimate reason to be here.
Right. So I get where you're coming from with the degree side of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to say, just the massive volume of useless degrees in America is staggering. It's like...
yeah.
Yeah, I think people in China graduate with more engineering degrees than all of us in, like, BS, you know, not BS degrees in science, but bullshit degrees.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, we've got all these people doing, you know, sociology or English degrees. I'm like, those are important for a teacher, but it's like, yeah. I had a lot of friends who got those degrees. I'm like, what do you want to do when you graduate? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, I do. It's going to be college debt. That's what you're going to be doing.
Yeah. Like, I tell anybody, if you think you're going to go on college debt, just join the military for 4 years, you know.
Exactly.
Get your free benefits and walk away.
Yeah. It's a great deal.
Because right now, I'm not paying for it at all.
That's literally one of the best ROIs ever. I mean, that is ingenious. That's the way to do it. It's like, a lot of those degrees, just no correlation to making money or making it back. But they're guaranteed, so who cares?
Yeah, and
the colleges don't care.
Some people are just thinking short term. That's all it is. And yeah. I can't fault somebody for that, especially when you're young. You don't know what you would do half the time you're... 18 to 21 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You're just trying to figure out your life in general.
Yeah.
But me coming in at my age, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing this because this is where it's going to get me here in 5 to 10 years.
And that's why you and that one guy were the only ones to turn the homework assignments in.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
I always remember this. My best friend always tells me this. He hated me in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We were in AP classes together, and I was a kid that was sleeping in class.
Yeah.
Because I never turned in homework, but I aced all the tests.
Oh, you're one of the smart guys.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I don't even know how I do it. My girlfriend hates it. She, my fiance hates it.
Congrats, man.
Yeah, thanks. Awesome. you know, I could sleep to a documentary and wake up and remember half of it.
What?
I don't know how I do it. I keep joking with her. I tell her, I'm like, I should just sleep with the book underneath my pillow for college, and I'll just, you know, naturally take in all the knowledge there.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's like an invaluable skill set or magic. I don't know.
Magic, you know.
But, yeah, I was the opposite. I had to work like hell just to pass some classes in college.
Which I still respect.
Yeah.
I don't think college is for everyone, in all honesty.
That's the biggest scam of our generation is – and I have my conspiracy theories, not to be too much off topic, but like our school, like our teachers through elementary school all the way out to high school, they basically insinuated if you didn't go to college, you'd be a loser, amount to nothing.
Yes.
And the most hilarious thing, the people who I meet who are the most successful on average have nothing more than not even a high school degree. Like,
right.
They just work like hell and find a niche or something they're passionate about. But yeah, back in the day, it's very much you have to go to college. You make so much more money. It's like, yeah. In some instances, however, those equations didn't leave that. You kind of omit that big number. It's a college debt that compounds greatly, especially if you have that most evil mistress of all, Sally Mae. It's like, I know people with 7% interest rates on their loans. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just, yeah, I don't think it's sustainable. I think we're going to see college degree applications and just overall just decreased. Next couple of years.
And a lot of the trade schools have gotten a lot more attention recently.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that you don't have to do what society tells you to do. If you enjoy what you're doing and you find a way to make it profitable, do it.
Yeah.
Like, go be a plumber. Go be an electrician. I have a buddy of mine that's an electrician. He makes way more money than I do. Yeah. You know? And he loves it.
That's another thing that's messed, or I think it's messed up with American society, is almost a pejorative negative connotation to a lot of those trades, when in actuality, a lot of them are solid jobs. You can have a great living, and you don't need a 4-year degree about underwater lesbian basket weaving. You can just work like hell and get your, you know, electrician, but obviously have certifications and stuff.
Right.
But they have those trade schools, and it's a great ROI, great way to make a living. And yeah, they just, culturally, the United States, we've just been kind of poo-pooing those industries.
Yeah.
I know Mike Rowe has probably been the best ambassador of, like, kind of bringing light to the fact that those are great careers and a great way to make a living.
Right.
But yeah, it's astronomical. You look at, like, street interviews and people are talking about, like, their inspiring partners' careers and stuff like that. It's like, they just think they have such a negative connotation to, like, manual labor.
Yeah.
And they think everyone has to be, like, a marketing major. It's like, no, there are a lot of invaluable jobs that you actually have to use your physical skill sets. Like, shoot, just heating, I mean, just HVAC units.
Yeah.
I mean, people realize those cost more than some cars. I mean,
and we know those guys make a killing here in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The most invaluable thing in the house. Does the washer and dryer work? Yeah, who cares? Does the AC work? Oh, yeah. That will be, that's the top priority.
Right.
Kitchen sink is kind of leaking. Who cares? AC.
Yeah, just throw a towel underneath that.
Exactly. Or old t-shirt. Yeah, we're on a budget here. Old t-shirt will be fine. But it's like, yeah, those HVAC units are invaluable.
Yeah.
And yeah, a couple of my neighbors just had them have to get replaced, and it's insane. Like, this was it the condenser unit alone, or just a subcomponent of the HVAC unit cost like $3,000. I was like, that is more than a used Mazda Miata on Craigslist. Like, geez Louise,
that's a good project car.
Oh yeah, oh, it is the best project car. I keep kicking myself for not buying a beater Mazda Miata when I was a kid, just because, you know, as a kid, or the Mazda Miata, kind of that pejorative American attitude is, it comes with a free purse. Because people think it's a girly car because it has no horsepower, relatively speaking. But if you go to the track, it is the best bang for the buck.
It has no horsepower until you turn it to a Monster Miata.
Yeah, I mean, allegedly it goes more than 5 miles an hour. But, like, yeah, that's... I love my Honda Civic Si, but it'll barely pass me out on the straightaway to track.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're... But it's all about the handling. It's got the perfect weight ratio. And
the person behind the wheel.
Oh, that's true, too. There's nothing more satisfying than passing someone in, like, well, me, I have a Honda Civic Si. I love passing Porsches and Corvettes on the track just because I have more experience than them. It's like, yeah, those cars, was a Porsche GT3. It's like $200,000 on the gray market, or, you know, secondhand market, if you can find one.
And here you are in like a $30,000 car.
Oh, it's worth much less than that now.
Well, I'm saying brand new. Yeah, brand new, your car. Oh,
it was like $26,500, like brand new list price.
That was close.
But it's getting there, but... Yeah, there's a certain satisfaction about passing cars that are a lot more expensive than yours when you have that skill set.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mazda Miata, I mean, there are more aftermarket suppliers for that than, like, the AR-15. Like, all the customization, all the parts, and you get, I mean, there's a reason it's called, I mean, they have a whole race class called Spec Miata just for that car, and those guys go balls to balls. Like, you'll see 40 of those going on the track at the same time, and they're going off the track left and right, but they've got no fear.
And see, that's the thing, too, is all, coming back on the skills, is like, you can learn anything.
Oh, yeah.
If you're willing to.
True.
I mean, I've switched my career 3 times already in my entire lifetime right now. Like, from military, had to learn how to be a civilian first.
What was that like?
It was tough. I'll be honest with you. I was originally signed up for the Marine Corps. Got in a little trouble in high school, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to wait 2 years, and I was like, no, I got to get out of this town.
They wanted you to wait 2 years?
In the Marine Corps, because your MOS has a certain time frame when you can go in for that MOS. Yeah.
Really?
Well, this is way back in the day.
Okay, is that per the MOS, or is that per the person, or geography?
Per the MOS, because the job has to be available before you went in.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So, like, it was a 2-year wait, and I'm like, I can't wait 2 years. I need to get out.
Yeah.
Like, I need to go.
Yeah.
And I always remember the Marine Corps recruiter looked at me. He's like, have you talked to the Coast Guard? I was like, who the heck is the Coast Guard? Like, what do they do? He's like, you never seen, like, the movie The Guardian? And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Ashton Kutcher, he's in the movie.
I didn't watch it at this time. I had no interest in the Coast Guard at first. And then I went and researched him, went and looked at him. I was like, okay, I can see myself doing this. This looks fun. Like, I just wanted something fast-paced and nonstop. Mm. That was me when I was younger. And went and talked to the recruiter. And then he told me a year wait. And I'm like, I can't wait a year.
They have waits?
What year
is this? What?
2009-10 frame.
Really?
Yeah. It was 2010, actually. Yeah, 2010. He called me back like a couple of days later. He's like, you want to leave in 2 weeks? They looked at my profile. Everything was good to go. I was already in shape.
There you go.
I'm not going to mention names, but I do remember when I went to the office to finalize everything, there was a couple of kids there, and they were training to lose weight so they could go to boot camp, and that's probably why there's some weights.
Yeah.
And then I remember one of them got mad, and he was like, why is he getting leave before I was next? And And he just looks at him because he's not a fat piece of. Like, oh,
brutal honesty. I love it.
And I was like, okay, I can be with this. I'm with this now.
Exactly.
Because that's what I needed. I want brutal honesty. Mm-hmm. I just want straight to the point and tell me what I need to do. Yeah. And I'll get the job done. And that's all I needed. But I did that for 8 years.
What was boot camp like, and where'd you go?
So I went to Cape May, New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did not like that place.
No, it's New Jersey. No one does.
No, exactly. I actually enjoyed boot camp. Mm-hmm. A lot of people hated it. And I do remember they brought in, I don't know how this happens. My life has some weird instances in it. So they brought in Marine Corps drill sergeants to like audit our stuff.
Really?
To audit how they're training us and blah, 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 blah. And I always remember he walked up to me and he said, yeah, the Coast Guard's like beating y'all down mentally. We beat our guys physically. And I'm just like, yeah, it is pretty mental, but I didn't think nothing of it. Like, I was already training with the Marine Corps since 2007 at this time. I was in the delayed entry program for a while. Like,
oh, really?
I knew at 16 I wanted to sign up. So I had already been training with them. I remember carrying the ammo cans in the fields and all the other stuff, throwing fake grenades as heavy as they are over and over and over again. I mean, I was running cross country and soccer at the time in high school. So I was fit.
Yeah.
I was ready. So the beating physically, I was like, this is nothing. The mental stuff though, I was like, you're just like, my dad talks smack. I can deal with this. Like, I'm fine with this. But I remember a couple other people in there that it would break them down. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say it wasn't tough. It was tough, but for me, I was okay with it.
And then where do you first serve, or what was that like?
So my trick, and this is for everybody in the military, is don't be selective. Don't care where you go. That's what I told him. I said, just send me. I just want to try law enforcement first. That's all I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I remember everybody getting their units first in boot camp, and it was like, you know, Alaska, and I was like, yeah, I wouldn't mind going there. And then, of course, lots of Virginias. I think there was a decent amount of Georgias, a lot up and down the Mississippi for the river tenders, because, you know, Coast Guard also maintains the shipping lanes and stuff like that. But me, they were like, yeah, you're going to Key West. I was like, oh, that's terrible. And everybody just looking at me, I'm like, oh, crap. And it was all just because I wrote on my dream sheet, law enforcement, anywhere. That was it. Yeah. I didn't care. And I spent a couple years there, loved it, of course, did a lot of law enforcement and, a lot of migrant interdiction, drug interdiction, checking shipping containers and stuff like that.
Really?
That was a lot of fun.
Do you ever see anything crazy? Like in the movies, you open up the shipping containers behind the bananas or all the, you know, crazy things. Like
no comment. No, I mean, my main job at the time was engineering. So like I was just working on the boats and stuff like that. I didn't, at this time I was still kind of new. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't getting involved as much as I should have until later on towards the end of that tour there. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to do law enforcement. I'm going to do everything now. And, I mean, I'm the type of guy, though, where you give me a job and I'm gonna make sure I know it like the back of my hand first before I move on to the next one. Because I've always wanted, it's not that I have to be the best. I want to be the best.
Yeah.
There's always somebody that's better than you, though. And that's the person you want to go underneath.
True.
So that's always how I've been. So I went from that and kept moving forward and moving forward.
What kind of engineering was it? Was it, you know, working those massive diesel engines? Really?
Diesel engines. We had two diesel engines and two generators that I worked on.
What kind were they? Because I know they get massive. Like the biggest engines in the world are the diesel engines.
They are German engines.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I'm allowed to say.
They're big and they go bang.
Yeah, they're big. They're a lot of hassle to work on sometimes. Parts. I remember parts being a problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think we had to wait. We went into dry dock one year, and that may not. I've been on the same boat three times, actually, just because I was fully qualified on it. So it was easy to send me to them. Mm. But yeah, I remember it took a couple of months just to get a motor to get fixed.
Really?
For parts. Yeah. We're talking about a German motor, though.
It's fancy.
Yeah. And that wasn't the worst ones. I've heard about some of the air side. Like, there's French motors, and then that takes even longer to get parts. I'm like, oof. Why do we do this?
I was about to say, I'm surprised there's just not a giant warehouse, like, right on the dock with all the parts. Now, I know there are probably more parts in there, like, that we can fathom, because a car is, you know, 10,000 to 30,000 parts.
Yeah.
I'm sure those things have, like, millions.
Yeah.
Millions. But, yeah, I'm surprised. Obviously, it's maybe not be cost efficient, but just have that giant warehouse space, you know, just right next, you know, right in the dock. But yeah, if you have parts internationally coming to you, then yeah, that would take a little while.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to imagine how it is nowadays.
Yeah, we'll see how much they cut the military with their standardization. Kind of do the whole, what was it? A couple decades ago, we had, was it JFK? Who was it? Oh, you lose me at the moment. There's a couple of gentlemen who wanted to do a lot of standardization of military hardware and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
McNamara's boys.
You know what's funny is the one thing I remember most about the first boat is we had an actual Mattel M16.
Oh, those aren't real.
Like,
those
the weren't real, original.
Though. Did it say Mattel on it?
I don't know if somebody put that on there, but I always remember them joking about it. And I'm like, why? But we had M16s.
I'm such a gun nerd. I went down the documentary rabbit hole and looked into the Mattel era. They thought it was Mattel because at the time, they were one of the first major manufacturers of plastics and polymers. So like they called it, you know, the Mattel AR-15, but it was just the Armor Light with, you know, the Colt when they came together and did that. But yeah, it was one of the first guns, pretty sure mass-produced guns with that polymer foreguard or a forend. So I mean, everyone thought it was the Mattel gun, but no, there's been military contracts with toy companies throughout the years.
I was gonna say, you know, the military plays jokes on everybody,
though. Oh, of course.
I mean, I still remember the first day I showed up to Key West. They were like, "Yeah, get the keys to the sea chest." I'm like, "Whoa, what?" I don't even know what that means. Like, is this some pirate word I don't know or whatever? No, it's just a wrench to open a port that opens up to the bottom of the ocean on your that the filtered water comes through, so they could get all the salt. And it's like, I wish I would have known this before I came here.
Right?
I was studying for the Marine Corps, not the Coast Guard.
Yeah,
I was learning all the slang on this side, and I realized I didn't take my time to learn on this side.
Whole new dictionary of words and lingo.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun though. But again, I never was picky. I went from Key West to New Orleans. From New Orleans to North Carolina for some training for a little bit, and then North Carolina to Galveston. And then I spent the last of my time in Galveston before I got out.
That's awesome. What was policing like when you went to that role in Coast Guard as well?
Galveston wasn't as busy as Key West was.
And then for the folks who might not know, what kind of policing was it? Was it the military police, or were you policing
maritime law.
Maritime law.
Okay. Yeah, so you've got to basically know international law, and then got to be careful when you go into other countries. Stuff like that.
Really?
I have been to other countries sometimes. I have accidentally caused an international incident.
Really?
So a pregnant lady was, we were trying to get her across.
Mm-hmm.
She almost fell.
Whoops.
Me being me, I'm always the helpful guy, and I want to take care of people. That's who I am. That's what made me good at the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
I leaned over, put my foot on their pier, and I had guns in my face, and I'm just like looking at them like I'm just trying to get her across.
Yeah.
Like, just please take her. Like, I'll gladly step, and I'll go walk down in the bottom of the boat right now and hide my face.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was kind of an international incident. Total accident, though. And they understood. Like, okay. I was just trying to help.
Yeah,
I didn't have my guns on me or anything, so I'm just like those people back there did, but I'm just like, I'm just trying to help. Like, I'm just getting people across.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that being careful with stuff like that, you just got aware of your surroundings at all times. Yeah, you know, and that was young. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was in my early 20s. I just wanted to party.
Right? See anyone trying to relabel their ship the Kono or anything like that?
No. Man. Yeah, I do miss some of the fun and excitement sometimes, but I mean, I've got a bum knee from it. I found out a couple years ago I actually had broken my back and my neck doing the military.
How do you find out years later?
My spine doctor, he goes, so these wounds are old, but you're supposed to have little squares in your spine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mine have cuts, like actual serrated, like cuts looking across them where they snapped.
Jesus.
And he said, they're already healed, but, yeah, you're basically going to be in pain the rest of your life. The only way to fix it is surgery. And I'm like, well, he's like, but you're still walking. I'm like, I just feel pain every day. I feel pain sitting here in the chair right now, but it's okay.
Jesus.
It's just pain. It lets me know I'm still alive.
Was it just a constant, carrying of heavy materials on the ships, or did you fall?
I was in a lot of hurricanes. I mean, it could be a plethora of things. I was lifting heavy things a lot.
What was a hurricane like? I can't imagine that stress when you're in the middle. Yeah, what was that like?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I look back at it now and I realize how young, dumb I was.
Yeah.
Because I was just enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I realized like the strain it actually put on my body, even being on a small boat, like when you have to go out and rescue somebody. I always remember one Master Chief always telling me, he's like, you need to take it easy. You need to stop trying to do so much. And I never understood why he was always telling me that. I'm like, but it's the job. I got to do it. You know, mm-hmm. Again, like, you know, hey, who wants to go out there and do that? Me. Like,
yeah.
I was young. I was 20. You know, what are you going to do in your 20s? You're going to do everything you can. Mm-hmm. You're an adrenaline junkie.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I do remember one very bad storm, and I can't remember if it was the hurricane or the tropical storm, but I'm assuming it was the hurricane. But I remember just seeing sky and seeing water, and that was not fun.
How tall were those waves too? Because again, movies try to portray them. It's kind of cliche to reference, you know, the movie with Ashton Kutcher. But like, how close was it? And do you think it's? I was wondering how accurate are they?
Oh, in that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that movie's a joke.
Man. Yeah, that's what it goes.
I actually like the movie The Finest Hours more.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't check that one out. I forget who stars in that one.
Ooh, don't quote me on that.
No,
it's on Disney though. But I like the emotion behind that one more. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Ashton Kutcher movie is more like a gung-ho, like
recruitment tool.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of.
Yeah,
it works. A lot of people were at the AST school when I saw it.
Well, I mean, there's a reason Top Gun is successful.
And I will say, those ASTs are no joke. Like, they're training. Like, really? they're training hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was like a, don't quote me, I'm just going to rough numbers. I think there was like a class of 20. I think only four of them made it.
Really?
Yeah.
What's AST stand for folks who don't know?
Aviation Survival Technician. So those are the rescue swimmers you'll see on the stuff.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah, it's not a joke.
I
got a lot of respect for those guys.
When you're going out to rescue people, were you mostly in the boat or do you also go in the helicopter?
Never did helos. The only time I did a helo ride was when I was in New Orleans. I was at the air station for a little bit. I went down, I can't remember what they call it. I think they call it like a familiarization ride or something where the pilot goes by himself, but he needs somebody in the co-pilot seat. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Again, 20s. I'm volunteering for everything. I want to do everything.
Yeah.
I want to experience everything.
Heck yeah.
So I have a photo somewhere, but I have a photo of me flying the helicopter for a little bit. He only, you know, take the stick. Like, oh, okay. I have no idea what I'm doing. This is terrifying.
That's awesome.
But that was the only time I was in a helo. But I was training. There was one guy that was better than me, but that's okay. But I was training to be the cutter swimmer. So you jump off the boat to go swim. And they do have that as well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Nobody realized how much the Coast Guard actually does. It's
It's
crazy the amount of things that you can learn and do in there.
That's incredible. You guys have some chutzpah or balls to do that. So you're jumping over the boat to go save other people.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And remember, there's always somebody better than you. There was a guy that was better than me at swimming. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I still was wanting to train with it. I was his backup in case he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I find a lot of joy in all that stuff. I still am kind of an adrenaline seeker, more so with cars now than anything.
What kind of cars do you like to play with these days? Or what kind of cliche to ask, but what do you like to do outside the office most?
I love tinkering around cars and anything. Right now, I'm also going to grab my dad's old 72 or 73 Sportster and try to figure out how to rebuild that thing. Never touched a motorcycle before. So
really?
Figure that out, too.
That's going to be pretty cool. Are you rebuilding the engine, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to rebuild the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, because it hasn't been running since he was probably the 80s is what he said, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take that and try to figure that out. But yeah, just tinkering. I like building. I get bored very easily, so I tend to just find projects to do. Like, I just got through building the back patio for myself. Like, just stuff like that. I got to do something, you know? Right. My hands have to be busy, or my mind has to be engaged. But yeah, I drive mainly my Cadillac. I have a 2024 Cadillac CT5V. All-wheel drive. Love that car to death.
I still can't believe how awesome those engines are. Because that's twin turbo V6, right?
Yes.
It's a small sample size, but that's one of the best things General Motors makes right now. Like, they're so
impressed. I genuinely hate V6s, I'll be honest with you.
Really?
I am a big V8 guy. So my other car is a 2015 Challenger RT.
Ooh, there you go.
That one I play with quite a bit. I've got a 6.4 cam in it, Hellcat heads. And nothing done on the bottom end yet, but I've got long tube headers, and obviously it's tuned.
How many pedals are you rocking, though?
Just two.
Oh, you're killing me. Bad knee. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't... My dream car is still to have a WRX STI.
Those things are sick.
I want the old, like, 2009 model.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's
like that
cool,
model.
Too.
Just something about that body.
They keep going up in value, though.
I know.
It's like, again, I hope the Subaru company will wake up or just tell governments to go to hell, because they still don't make the new STI because it's, government regulations and emissions, yada, yada, yada. But it's such a tease. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to have the WRX STI automatic only. It's like, no one but five people want that configuration. It's
right.
Like, yeah, one of my buddies has, what was it, 2024 or 20 era STI? And, yeah, I test drove one of those, and I wanted it so badly when I was looking at a car, I just couldn't afford it. Because, especially new, they're pretty penny. Great value for the money, but just with my position, I couldn't afford it. But when I was test driving cars, in terms of handling, horsepower per dollar is one of the best cars. I mean, and such a great responsive stick shift.
But you haven't drove the V yet.
I did.
All-wheel drive.
No, I drove the CT. So one of my friends had the CT4V Blackwing, but that was rear-wheel drive only.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did have the stick shift, so I loved it. It broke. I think I kind of joke with him. I think I tell him, like, I think I'm more heartbroken that you sold it than you were. It was like, oh, yeah. And they got the nice, I love the carbon fiber accents inside, like, the red seatbelts.
Yep.
Cadillac they've really stepped up their game. There's so many rumors about them may or may not, continue the CTV Black Series wearing. I mean, I would love a CT5V Blackwing with a stick shift and V8.
Yeah.
The issue is, of course, the price point. I think it starts at $96,000, and then when you configure
it. If you're lucky.
Yeah, that's the part too. It's like,
yeah,
if you're lucky, and then like after configuration, it's like, yeah, more like
about 116,000.
Yeah, plus sales tax and all that. It's like, yeah, but again, it's also one of the last V8 stick shift sedans out there.
I mean, right.
Maybe, which BMW might have that. Like, there's so few options. It's so rare.
So I got lucky with my car. I want an all-wheel drive, and that's because my grandfather lives up north. And I'm like, we go to Colorado, and I'm not trying to drive, like, I don't want to drive my Challenger through the mountains.
Be entertaining, but you might not get stuck every 5 feet.
It's a very loud car, so everyone would hate me in general anyway.
Well, that's half the fun, though. It is. The roar of the V8. I mean...
But yeah, I was actually going to the dealership to buy a used BMW. I think it was a 7 Series all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, don't quote me, I think it's the V8 or the V10 with the turbo on it or something like that.
I think they killed the V10. I wish.
It was an older one. I do know that because it had like 50 or 60,000 miles on it, which I knew I was taking a risk on it. It's a BMW.
Yeah.
but I was like, hey, for the price point, I'm okay with it. I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. I know how to work on them. Yeah. The shop I worked at, I worked on BMWs and Mercedes and stuff, so I got to be exposed to a lot.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So, and I have the tools, thank God. A lot of expensive tools.
Oh, yeah. BMWs are so intricate. It's great engineering, but, yeah, the maintenance is what really turns me off. Yeah. It's like, man, some of the best track cars out there, one of the best stick shift, like, great stick shift option for those two.
Yeah.
And some people hate the new designs. I mean, not to be too pessimistic, but I almost think this is as good as it's going to get for BMW and a performance car. Because after this, I mean, unless you have some huge change in regulations, I think they're going to go smaller engine, automatic transmission, more hybrids. I mean,
everyone's going smaller now.
So it's like
everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, Dodge has got the.
Dodge is back, baby.
Four cylinder that they're coming out with, turbo. They have it in the. Is it the Renegade they're calling it? Or the Rampage? The Rampage.
Ugh.
That's over in Brazil, and they're talking about bringing it here.
Like a steak in Brazil.
A great tiny truck, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like the old S10 with the four cylinder in it. Phenomenal gas mileage for those things, if you're looking for that.
They're fun.
I mean, I don't buy a truck for gas mileage, but
no
hey,
one
that's
does.
Okay.
I mean, no. Yeah, no one. I mean, I am so embarrassed right now not to remember the former Dodge CEO's name. Is it Tim or Tom? But he's back.
Yeah, I know he's back.
So they already have the V8 back for the 1500 truck, so that's good because they knew.
Oh, they were going to lose money left and right.
Were? Or yeah, they are.
Well,
they did.
Are. Sorry. Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
Were?
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, since they changed it, they'll bounce back.
But I mean, and then they just announced a couple weeks ago that SRT is coming back. So again, the performance side, it's kind of funny. Like, everyone kind of forgot that Dodge Durango exists because that was technically an SRT. They had that trim level option, but like, no one cares.
No.
So I'm thinking Dodge, well, Stellantis wants to make money. In theory, they lost 47% revenue and 43% profit last fiscal year.
Yeah.
So they know they're going to bring it back. So there's some companies bringing back V8s, thank God. But yeah, the SRT, I mean, bring back the Viper. That thing is iconic.
It's Mopar for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, Dodge, of all the companies, was like, we want fast, loud, and dumb. We know our customer is perfect. And it's like, yeah, the Challenger, the Charger, the big old Hemi.
Even the 1500s.
Oh, yeah.
You don't even, I barely find 1500s with the 5.7 in it, or the 6.2 or the 6.4, whatever it has, without an exhaust system because they're proud of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every Dodge owner has an exhaust system. Whether it's just like, oh, I just cut the muffler off and put a straight pipe. Oh, yeah. Oh, go. Oh, yeah. I'll do this. I'll do that. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. You love your Hemis.
Oh, yeah.
If Dodge paid attention to that, clearly, because we have to bring it back. We need money.
They're so desperate right now. They need money, and they need performance. And I don't know. We'll see what happens with government regulation. Again, I try not to be too political, but in terms of regulation, automotive is one of the most heavily regulated industries. Like, I was looking into the documentaries of the Dodge Viper, which to me was one of the, I'd say, top 50, easily top 50, maybe even top 30 cars of all time.
Yeah.
Because, again, a V10 stick shift, no nanny accessories, just pure skill, which, not great for some people, but it's the thing where it was a marvel of engineering, great track toy, and just pure enthusiast built. And I figured out, like, a lot of people thought, I actually thought they killed it because of emissions regulations, which is killing some, you know, engines.
Right.
But it's actually because of safety. They needed, because of the new regulation for safety, they needed to have an extra airbags. I believe it was in the door frame, I forget the specific area.
Right.
Maybe it's the A-pillar or something, like whatever it is. But the cost to actually re-engineering the car to fit was just too great, and they decided not to continue making it. So it was actually, I didn't realize it was a safety regulation that killed that car, which is kind of ironic because people who are buying it,
I was going to say, if you increase the price, somebody's still going to buy it.
That's true. I mean,
that's one of those cars where you look at it, you know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's very distinct.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Like, okay, let's talk about Teslas for a minute. Tell me what difference you see between a Tesla D, what is it, D100, whatever it is, compared to a regular Tesla.
a D's on it, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. You look for a badge. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, you look at a Challenger, you can see the difference between a wide-body Hellcat or a Demon. Like, oh, yeah. There's slight, subtle differences, but it's enough to make a difference.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one thing I loved about my Challenger is it looked like the old-school Challenger. It had the right body lines, mm-hmm. the right taillights, headlights. Like, everything on it was perfect, and that's why I wanted that car so bad.
What color you get? I forget.
Oh, black. All my cars are mostly black.
Do you ever see the commercial for it was like 100 years of Dodge, and it had the grandpa who had the Challenger in the farm showing his grandkids? Like, that was one of the best uses of emotional rhetoric and visualization I've seen in commercials for years. I mean, it's just perfect. And those cars are so much fun.
Yep.
And they're so easy to work on because they got so much room in the engine bay, so you actually move without, you know, hitting the side of the engine bay with your wrist and your elbow and just getting knocked up.
Ironically, those are not my favorite car. My favorite car is at my parents' house right now.
What's your favorite car?
It's my car. My old car. It's a 72 Cutlass Supreme.
Really?
That's my favorite car.
I like that. Those things are bulletproof.
Yeah.
It's like all the 70s.
It's got the 350 Rocket in it. And I'm kind of glad it does. Everybody's like, I want the 442. But everybody's converting the 350s into 442s.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, keep doing it because it's making my car worth more.
One of my friends had the 442 growing up, or more accurately, her dad did.
Yeah.
And like, we'd see the car in the garage and the giant badge. It's like, oh, that's so cool. It's like, no replacement for displacement.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful car, but I love my little 350 Rocket with the Power Glide.
Again, they got some fun little cars. I mean, one of my favorite cars growing up, I actually learned how to drive stick, was on my buddy's Dodge SRT4, which was, you know,
the Dodge Skittle.
Yeah, it's a, you know, the Dodge Neon, but, you know, the SRT, so you got, you know, nice actually racing brake calipers, pads, big old turbo.
Again, subtle changes.
Oh, yeah. And again, you got the hood with the little vent or the hood scoop that's actually functional. And, like, yeah, there's a couple cars like you only know if you know.
Yeah.
But it's enough.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's why the Chevy SS kind of failed. It was a great car, but zero advertising, and it looked too similar to the Malibu and other cliche vehicles.
It just looked like every other family car.
Yeah, and people didn't realize.
But then we talk about the G8.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they added subtle changes to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, why don't y'all do that?
They should have done a little bit more. Australian Holdens are fun.
Oh, yeah. But like, and that's what everybody's doing to them now.
Here, they're switching them. Maybe it's just a really good look of rebadging. You'd see them on the road. But, like, the Chevy SS, I mean, you got a V8. And they were dumb, of course, because GM. It boggles my mind some of the bad decisions they make. And then every once in a while, they'll impress me. Like, oh, yeah, they brought in the car first with the V8 and automatic, which, I mean, you look at the take rate of who wants that car.
Yeah.
They want sticks. So it's like the Inferno Orange one was really nice. And it's got, that was a good year. Was it 2008 when they imported the Chevy SS era?
Yeah, because that's when the G8s were pretty popular here still.
Yeah.
2008, like, 2009.
I think that's kind of a good balance in terms of automotive engineering, where you had just enough tech to have it comfortable. You got the heated, cool seats. You got some Bluetooth, maybe little maps. But then after that, like, you put so much tech, it starts to become unreliable and it becomes a computer on wheels and so hard to troubleshoot.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, the Chevy SS, those are so cool. And people know it because now they're worth their MSRP price or more as they become, quote, unquote, collectibles. Like, even those Dodge SRT, like, I'm, you know, the Facebook groups have them going for like 15, 30 grand. I'm like, oh, one of the best sleepers that I wish I had growing up or I wanted as a kid was a Chevy Cobalt SS with a turbo from the factory. It's one of those coolest cars.
It's just so funny because I'm like, all I can think of is everybody in high school had one.
Really?
It's like a Cobalt SS, kids. Or they were just throwing the SS badge on it just to be like everybody else. And it's like, I would almost say that's probably a Chevy Skittles.
Oh, yeah,
so I always call the SRT4 the Dodge Skittles because you could find them in any color you wanted.
Oh, blues are all over.
Blues. Oh, yeah. I remember I had a couple.
Orange.
I had one orange, the yellow one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I always know why I like that yellow.
There's some cars you just see in person. You go, that belongs. That should be yellow. It's like, it makes sense. It fits it perfectly.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, some of those are becoming collectibles over the years and just the prices are just through the stratosphere.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that the Mazda RX-7 from Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, do you see how much that went for?
A couple hundred thousand, right? Oh, millions now? Oh.
1.2 million.
But you can get the, I saw the Eclipse. They have a ton of those still.
Oh, yeah, they're around.
Yeah, the exact Eclipse from Fast and Furious, though. And I think you can get it for around 40, so it's not too bad.
It's not bad. Terrible for a movie replica.
Now, you can get the one without the motor, the one that uses the crash vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that one. It was only like 15 grand.
Well, I believe it for the shell.
Just a shell.
It's like,
it'll look good.
Of course. Well, I mean, there's some people that bought the BMW. Was it the i8 or i7? What was the one that looks like a hybrid car, but it's a disappointing hybrid?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I think it's the i8.
I think you're right.
It looks cool, but then.
No drivetrain. Well,
I don't want to be in it.
Disappointing drivetrain. Yeah.
I don't know.
I wish BMW took more risks like the M1. That was the dual fuel tank. Just that picture is so iconic. But yeah, there's some companies where they just don't take a lot of risk. And some of them can't because they're smaller, like Honda. Like, they don't take too many risks throughout the years. They have the core five cars that will always sell pretty well.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, but you're talking about a longevity car, though, too.
That's true.
I mean, they've built a good company.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're like, hey, this motor works. Keep buying it.
Yeah, Toyota way. I mean, shoot, those things right. are darn near bulletproof, and in some cases are bulletproof.
And like, see, that's talking about with Toyota. So my dad had a Toyota, and he hated getting it maintenanced because they changed it where it's Toyota Lexus parts. Mm-hmm. And then he looked at me with my Honda. I go to the dealership. His $4,000 job was only like maybe $1,500 for me. And he's like, well, I don't get it. How come they don't do Acura Honda? I was like, I don't know. Maybe Honda just has a better parts group. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But I'm sticking my Honda because I'm not. It was $4,000 for a front end on a 2009 Toyota Camry.
For a front end? Like
a whole front
end. A bumper? What do you mean?
No, suspension. Like a whole front end. He needed all. Yeah, I was like, because they were selling Toyota Lexus parts. They're charging for the Lexus parts. And I never forgot that. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm never going to have, if I'm going to buy a Toyota, I'm just going to go ahead and buy a Lexus.
It's one of those things where, I mean, shoot, same thing with the Volkswagen group, too.
Yeah.
It's like, why is that part, $5 on a Volkswagen, but $50 on a Porsche? It's like, or the Bugatti's that's the biggest offender. The story is so infamous with the window switch in the Bugatti was broken. And they told him it would cost $10,000 or $12,000 to fix. And his buddy bought a 5-pack of those switches for $5 and did it for like a case of beer. It's like, you're paying a luxury tax. And granted, they have massive overhead. They put a lot of money in research development. And to Volkswagen credit, they actually lost money on the Veyron. They just did it out of passion, which I really admire, just to make the fastest car on the planet. It's like,
it reminds me of the Riventone. The Riventone, the Lamborghini. That's the last car that they built. Now, I mean, that thing was beautiful. I would love to own one, but I'm not dropping $1 million-something on a car.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of cars that I'd love to own, but like part of me, even if I got it for free, I'd be so turned off. I'm like, what's the maintenance? What's an oil change? What? It's like McLaren F1's the best car in history to me.
Yep,
and
I
also,
agree.
But also, everything times out. So like, even if you park it and do not use it for a single mile, that you have to replace it after like 5 years, and that fuel cell is like $250,000 or $250,000, not $250. $250,000 for a fuel tank. And again, it makes sense. And to BMW and McLaren's credit, which again, BMW famously makes the V12 inside of the vehicle, they support that to this day. I do wonder if they actually make any profit out of that, or is that just for the cultural significance in the brand, just to keep the
brand. You got to keep the brand alive, probably.
Them and Porsche is probably the best. The Carrera GT, they still maintain that. And they actually, do you hear about the Michelins that came out with that?
No.
They cut off more than, 20 seconds of lap time in Nürburgring just by engineering new tires to Michelin's credit. It's like a car that's been, made 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
New tire. And again, tires obviously are one of the biggest things you can do to make a car faster. And like all this time, they still make, now a lot of people are saying maybe it's because of liability, because people tend to crash those cars, but nevertheless, they still take care of the customer long term. So it's like, man, I'd love to get one of those, high-end Porsche, one of these days with three pedals would be awesome. But yeah, There's a prepaying for that luxury tax. You're paying for that service.
Yeah. And, it's funny. Like, my fiance laughs at me because I collect the Matchbox and the Hot Wheel cars. And I tell her it's because I'm never going to own them in real life. This is as close as I can get.
You never know.
You never know. But at least I got my Hot Wheel.
Exactly. Well, shoot, have you taken your car to the track yet?
No.
Oh, come on.
No, I haven't.
Eagle Canyon Raceway is like right next door.
I mean, it's only got 24,000 miles on it.
That's mean she's broken in, ready to go. Redline that thing.
I'd take the Challenger. I like drag racing. I do love drag racing. My truck that I had in the military was a 2012 Dodge Ram, single cab short bed with the Hemi, obviously.
Of course.
I had a 4x4 on it. Nice. At the time, I didn't know enough about cars that I was like, I'm going to do all this on my own. No. Mm-hmm. What I did is every time I went on a deployment, I would just give it to the shop. And I was down. That was when I was down in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, just make it faster. I'm going to give you $3,000, and I want you to make it faster every time I come back. And they were like, all right, cool. And they loved it because they got to basically, I told them, do what y'all want.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was straight piped, all the good stuff on it. And they was tuned. I remember I ran out the track down there in Houston. I still have the slip at my house framed. 12.8.
Holy shit, for a truck?
For a truck.
That's awesome.
I did rip off my front belt, though, and I blew off a pulley, too.
But you crossed that finish line.
But I crossed that finish line.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yep.
12.8. Holy 12.8. Shit.
Yep. And
it's a blistering faster truck.
Holy yeah. Shit. And, man, I regret selling that truck now that I think about it more and more.
I was going to say, you still got that guy's number? You ever think about going back trying to find it?
No. I actually sold that thing to, like, give me the VIN or something, just because at the time I needed the cash, and they offered me a good chunk of money for it. Because I had relatively low miles on it, and, like, it was built.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing was a beast. And that's what I told my fiance. I was like, I'm going to get the Challenger up there too. They're heavy vehicles. Oh, it takes a lot to get them moving. Because I think the Challenger right now is sitting 400, 400 horse and torque.
That's pretty.
Yeah, and that's for a 5.7.
Yeah.
My goal is to try to get it to 600 and then maybe supercharge it with a Whipple.
Ooh, that's what you do.
I still got to do the bottom end, though. So I'm like, all right, I can get it with the bottom end, I think.
They're pretty robust engines from the factory. Again, I love when they actually over-engineer the engine so you can actually properly modify it without having to worry about it exploding. I think, well, best example probably being the Mark IV Supra. It's like, you can do anything with that engine. 1,000 plus horsepower, no problem. It's like they're just built that great. And
well,
that,
I mean, you look at the LS series motors.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Like, you know, how do you make a Ford Mustang faster? You throw an LS motor in it.
True.
Now, that was up until, what, 2019, 2020, when they started just dumping power into these things. I'll give Mustang some credit on that.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those cars, I'm like, dang, y'all crammed 400 horse out of a 5.0 now.
Right.
Like, we're talking Shelby GT numbers now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it blows my mind, but sometimes they just get the right engineer.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it is to it. And they'll have this one good series of cars, and then we'll go back to getting like the Mustang Mach-E where I'm just like, you can keep it.
Yeah. You're going to keep that disposable EV. Have fun with that.
So for me, like when you're in a car, you got to feel it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you want to feel the rumble. You want to, like, I can feel when it's missing. Like, you know, just little things like that.
The soul of the vehicle.
There's not something about, sure, that throws you in your seat. Like that's...
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fast.
So does an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, but like, that doesn't impress me. What impresses me can I sit idle and can I feel it? Do I feel the heart and soul of this vehicle while I'm sitting in it?
Exactly.
Like, I can feel how much love you've put into it because if you're ain't taking care of your vehicle, your vehicle's going to tell me you ain't taking care of it.
Exactly.
You know, stuff like that. That's always been important to me.
Oh, it's one of those things where it's like, if you know nothing about cars and you just want to go to the grocery store 40 miles every day or something like that, it's like, and more importantly, you don't care about long term like ROI or, basically having a disposable car.
Yeah.
Sure. Go for an EV or lease an EV. If you don't care. For someone who leases cars and you get an EV for like $50, there's certain situations where it can be beneficial. But like to me, I mean, I will always want three pedals. I want an engine. I want to be able to hear the car.
Yeah.
And a kid in me always loves to hear the turbo spool up. So you got to get the ram air intakes. Like, may get one more horsepower, but realistically, just doing it to make me smile every time I hit the gas.
Smiles per gallon is important.
Precisely. But it's like, yes, just something about a gas car is so much more fun. And, you know, working on it yourself, actually turning the wrench, getting more and more horsepower out of it. It's just, you can't beat that feeling.
No, you can't. And I mean, like, you take more pride in it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, let's say you soup up a Tesla. I loaded a code.
I was going to say your
favorite. I plugged it in.
You know,
I
just turned it off because I don't like that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I ripped this whole engine block apart and rebuilt it from scratch.
Yeah.
Like, every single part I touched.
Yeah.
You know, that has more meaning.
Well, it's kind of like a quartz movie at watch versus automatic watch. It's like, well, one of them's a work of art and craftsmanship. It's like, technically, it's not as fast as a quartz movement, $5 watch from Walmart, but, you know, one's got some heart and soul in it. I know it's, is that Invicta?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an Invicta watch.
Dude, those I love, it's kind of sculpted on the front, too. That's really cool.
Yeah. And I hate batteries.
Oh, yeah.
And I will tell you, this is the dive watch. Mm-hmm. Man, these watches are tough.
Oh, yeah.
And, if you build me good craftsmen, you'll get my business. That's all it is. Got to be good. That's it. Doesn't have to be the best. There's always, you know, Rolex is probably considered, the best. I'm like, whatever. I don't need a Rolex. They're boring.
I certain parameters. Like, my watch is, it works.
Exactly.
It tells me
it works. Yeah, it's good
for running. But it's like, it's not a work of craftsmanship. It's not really a work of art, so to say. It's not something that'll last more than a decade or I got really lucky with this watch. I'll give Garmin credit. But it's like, on average, this won't stand the test of time. A mechanical watch like yours, like, that's something you pass down to generations
because
the craftsmanship put into it is just hand built. There's, again, no batteries that will, you know, go bad or explode.
I got my battery watches, but that's only because, like, I'll be honest with you, I'm a fanboy. They came out with the Marvel series Invicta watches.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like,
I got a buddy who'll trade some. Yeah.
You know, I kind of need that Captain America watch because it matches everything I have.
Yeah, there you go.
America.
I was going to say, I think, like you said, you like to go shooting too.
I do like to go shooting. Haven't been in a while. I'm a little at fault for that, but I got a lot of life going on. So, but yeah, I built my first gun when I was in the military around 2013 from scratch. That was a lot of fun. It's not as hard as people want to make it seem. It's just a matter of getting there and doing it. Just like anything else, you can learn anything. But I just built a little SBR. I ended up selling that maybe a year later. Mm-hmm. I just get bored. Like I said, I just got to keep moving.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got like a, you know, Colt and M4 and 5.7. And
that's fancy ammo. 5.7? You got some Belgium engineering in the house. That's
fancy. Yeah. You know, and I just keep every time I find it on sale, it gets snagged. The ammo.
Right. Oh, exactly. It's, yeah, I want to rent a P90 for an IT event, and it's going to be so expensive because a magazine has 50 rounds. It's like a dollar per round.
Yep.
It's like $50 in like 12 seconds. Not even 12 seconds, like 3 seconds. Like,
yeah.
The fastest way to spend money is with a machine gun. But, I mean, shoot, talk about fun hot cartridge is a 5.7.
I always remember the 50 cal Mall Deuce.
Oh, of course.
And then you're just like, twinkle, twinkle, little star. Oh, the whole can's gone.
That's a couple $100.
Yeah. Oh, for that one. Poof.
Oh, yeah, because that's, well, the cheapest 50 cal is like, what, $4, $5 per unit or per shot? It's like,
yeah, I wouldn't even want to imagine like trying to shoot that like in the civilian world.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God the military paid for it.
All right.
Sorry, taxpayers.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I do enjoy shooting a lot. That's also another outlet for me. Gaming, you know, that's another outlet too. But yeah, shooting is the adrenaline rush that you get from shooting and driving.
Oh yeah,
it's hard to beat.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, it is.
I really want to get a 5.7 one of these days. Kind of cliche. I'd probably want the P90. Of course, you got to SBR that.
There's
something abhorrent about seeing that with that big awkward barrel just awkwardly just poking out of the gun. Only there because of regulation, because the United States got the NFA Act of 1934, which, who knows, maybe we'll see be repealed in our lifetime, maybe. But yeah, I always laugh and kind of cry when I see like the FMP90 with that barrel sticking out. It's like, it's a bolt. Like, it goes against the whole design of the gun. Like, oh. Just comical.
I just like it because it looks weird.
It does.
I told my fiance, I gotta have it.
Oh yeah,
and it's just because I already have the ammo for it. Why not?
That's true. You gotta get rid of the ammo somehow.
Yeah, you can't
just keep ammo forever. Yeah. I mean, you know, you gotta cycle through it.
Precisely. But yeah, no, I've got my grandfather just gave me his old M1 Grand.
And, oh really?
Yeah,
nice. And the iconic ping is half the fun of that gun. Like,
I know, and I'm just like, I don't even know where I'm gonna shoot this. I'm gonna have to go out to my parents' land to go be able to shoot this thing.
You shoot here. What do you mean?
I like shooting outdoors, it's just not fun indoors, I feel like, shooting.
Not yet, no. I mean,
there's a different feel.
Shooting steel outdoors is so much fun. I haven't done that since Iowa. Or no, we did a cigar event outdoors two or three years ago. It was so much fun. But yeah, that's the downside of living in cities. I yearn for a ranch before, you know, one of these days. But yeah, shooting outdoors is so much fun, especially, you know, taking care of old hard drives, old servers. Like, oh yeah, that's how you make IT recycling fun.
And I just like shooting outdoors more, in all honesty. That's probably why I don't shoot anymore, because now we're in the city limits, and I'm like, ugh.
All the indoor ranges.
Yeah,
some of them have good, some have bad ventilation. It's like, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't trust people.
Yeah, idiot. Yeah,
you know, you'll get the one new person that just got their gun. They're gonna go shoot, and I'm just like, yeah, you're gonna kill me if I stay here. So I'm just gonna leave.
It can get scary.
Yeah, yeah. And I've only ran into that like once or twice, but it's just like it's enough to make me like, yeah, I'm okay.
Is it worth the risk?
No, I'll go out to my dad's land. I don't have to worry about anybody but myself.
Maybe bring some Tannerite too. Have a blast, pun intended.
Oh god, there was like a few years ago that happened. There's a guy that has thousands of acres behind my dad, and I don't know how much Tannerite he blew up, but it was enough for me to feel it in the ground.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, the cop showed up at my house, and I'm like, why are you picking on me? Like, well, we know you got all the guns. I was like, oh, it's around the corner. Go around the corner. Yeah. I wouldn't even have enough money to buy that much Tannerite. They probably bought truckloads.
Oh, it gets expensive.
Yeah, I'm just like, no, I'd rather spend money on guns.
Best way to do it.
Guns or ammo.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no, I need to go shooting again, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, we'll head up the range soon.
Let's go.
Perfect. Well, Jeremy, thanks so much for the show, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to tune in. Don't forget to take time to like, subscribe, and comment. Also, don't forget to take time to tell your family, tell your friends, tell your coworkers, heck, tell your enemies, tell anyone, everyone. Just stay safe. Y'all have a great day. Talks.